Okay, thanks Everhard, and thank you all for coming. So what I'm going to say here today are a summary of the work has been carried out over in Everhard's group for a number of years. It started when we were still at Cornell University, and it lasted until now. It's still ongoing, so it's a pretty long talk. I hope you can stay awake at the end. So most of the data we got from doing Lagrangian particle tracking. So these are purely experiment data. And I would like to acknowledge the support from Max Planck from National Science Foundation and German Science Foundation, and Hendong, he is a Humboldt Fellow in our group. He got support from the Humboldt Fellowship. So, I would just give a very, very brief introduction on what we are after, why I put Bark turbulence in the title, and then just to say something about acceleration statistics and the velocity structure functions. Okay, so. Well, we all know these flexible non-chain polymers in the flow field, they can be when they are not stressed, they will tend to coil into a ball shape, and you can define the radius of gyration, and they have a relaxation time. And then if there is some kind of stretching due to the flow, then you can define this Weisenberg number. These are the ratio of the polymer relaxation time scale to the flow time scale. If Weisenberg number is larger than one, the polymers will be stretched. They can be stretched to all the way to the maximum extension. So these are all well known, and there are many parameters in this. So this is the Reynolds number and the Weisenberg number. So when Weisenberg number is large, but Reynolds number is small, that's the elastic turbulence. Wixler has investigated a lot. And when the Reynolds number is large, we have close to the wall, we have this well known drag reduction phenomena. And what we want to do is we want to look at the properties of turbulence in polymer solutions, but far away from boundaries. So, and also there is an additional parameter, which is the polymer concentration, which is somehow very strangely usually ignored in a lot of previous investigations, either theoretical or numeric investigations. So for Bark turbulence, if it is a Newtonian fluid, we have this energy cascade picture by Richardson Kolmogorov. We know the flow is the energy is injected into the flow from large scales, and then it cascades down to smaller and smaller scales until it's finally taken over by viscosity converted to heat. So we have the energy injection rate and energy transfer rate and energy dissipation rate. They are the same quantity but measured at different scales. So in the Newtonian flow, we know these three has to be equal. Energy has to be balanced. But now, if we put polymers into the picture, we know polymers can take energies away from the turbulence kinetic energy, and because they can be stretched, so they can store elastic energy, and they will coil back at its own time scale. So it might re-inject the energy back into the flow field at some other scales. And then finally there is dissipation. So in this case, we have no idea what's the relationship between the three, the injection rate, the transfer rate, and the dissipation rate. So that's the main interest that we have to this problem. So what's the behavior? What's the effect of polymers on the homogeneous and isotropic turbulence? Okay. So throughout the talk, I will report data mostly from the measurement with this polymer, the polyacrylamide, which has a molecular weight 18 million. It's a very long chain, and the radius of gyration is about half micron. It can be stretched to maximum 77 microns, and it has a relaxation time scale of 43 milliseconds in water. And so here, just for to comparison, just give one typical give the flow properties at one typical Reynolds number, which is R number 350. That's the one we will see most of our data were taken at this Reynolds number. So in that case, we have the Kolmogorov time scale, which is 84 micrometers. That's larger than the maximum stretching rate. So the polymers, even when they are stretched to the maximum extent, they are still smaller than the Kolmogorov scale. And the Kolmogorov time is 7.1 milliseconds. So if we compare with the polymer relaxation time, we see the Weissenberg number is about 6, which is larger than 1. So at that reload number, polymer will be stretched. And in our experiment, we vary the concentration from 0 to maximum 20 ppm by weight. Okay. So the first part is about acceleration statistics. That's done by Alice and Nicola. So they did this with a silicon strip detector in the so-called French washing machine. So that's a flow between two counter-rotating disks. So we have this complicated flow in the cell. We have this shearing motion because of the rotation of the disk and the pumping motion. So the data was taken in the center of the tank. And that is very small. It's a 4 millimeter in size, and the data was taken for R lambda vary from 140 to 480, and throughout this Reynolds number range, what we found is the integral scale stays roughly constant, because that's mainly determined by the geometry of the apparatus. It doesn't change with Reynolds number. And then the Kolmogorov scale varies from 320 to 50 micrometers at the maximum Reynolds number. And the Kolmogorov time scale varied a lot. You see, it almost by two orders of magnitude change. And to resolve the dynamic at this small time scale is a challenge. So that's the silicon strip detector can record at 70,000 frames per second. So that is enough to measure at these high Reynolds numbers. And what we use in this case are almost neutrally buoyant particles, polystyrene particles. It has a density ratio about 1 compared to water. And the diameter is small compared to Kolmogorov time, Kolmogorov length scale. So you follow the flow faithfully. And so this is the measured acceleration PDF. The axial component, by axial I mean the direction perpendicular along the disk axis. So that's the rotation axis, and also in the radial component. And the blue circles are the data measured with pure water, and the red circles are the measured with polymers. And this is at 5 ppm at a given Reynolds number. So we see the polymer suppressed fluid acceleration quite a bit. And now if we normalize this PDF with their own RMS value, then we see all the PDF collapse in both axial and radial directions. So this says something about what the effect of polymers, but exactly how, we don't know. Okay. So now we look at if we say, okay, so the shape of the PDF doesn't change, then the parameter we can investigate are this variance, acceleration variance. So on this plot, we plot the ratio of acceleration variance. Okay, I'm sorry, so this is actually RMS of acceleration when there is a polymer compared to the pure water case. So it starts at 1 when there is no polymer. And then we see it decays when we add more and more polymer. And there is a weak Reynolds number dependence. So the data here, we have four different Reynolds numbers from 140 all the way up to 485. For this data set, because the Weissenberg number is very large and the polymers are destroyed very quickly, you can see the errors are quite big because we have fewer statistics for this high Reynolds number case. And we vary the concentration from 0 to 10 ppm. So we see this change of acceleration, RMS acceleration with polymer concentration. And also, it's interesting to note this increase of anisotropy when we add more and more polymers into the flow. So you see here what we plot are the ratio of the radial component compared to the axial component of acceleration. And then it starts at some number small. The flow is not isotropic. So to start with, it's not isotropic. But then as we add polymers, the degree of anisotropy increase. So these are two data from two different reload numbers. The blue ones are at R number 200, and the red one are at R number 285. So they both increase when we add more and more polymers into the flow. Yes?
You have such a different error bus.
Why do
you have such a difference in the error bars?
Such a difference in error bars. You mean why these are larger and these are smaller? So these are just sort of given by the number of statistics. Yeah. So for some data we have a fewer statistics. Okay. So what?
I thought what prevents you to increase a lot the concentration to see if it saturates or not? Yeah.
There are practical. These are just practical reasons. So, first of all, as you can see here, we already see a huge effect at R lambda, even at 10 ppm. So, if we go to higher and higher concentrations, you can imagine the effect will be very very small to detect. Okay, so
you imagine it saturates.
Well, if it goes to zero, I mean, it's very hard to see the relative change. If we do 20, it might be here, and then 30, it might be about the same. So we can't say much about is saturating or is it still changing with some kind of. As you see, we measured at up to 20 ppm. But the practical problem is the following. If we want to do this at high concentration, we have to prepare the solution first. And so the apparatus is...
So I asked about Arsenal.
Yes? Sorry. Okay, so let me answer this question first. So the apparatus, as you can see, is a big apparatus. It has 140 liters of water. So to do that, the way to work is we have to first prepare a solution which is much, much dense compared to the final solution we get into the tank. So for example, we have a 2-liter beaker and we prepare this very slowly over almost 24 hours to make sure the polymer dissolves in water. And then we add this gently. And degas, yeah. We have to. That's why we have to dissolve this very gently to stir this overnight, over one day, and then we put this into the apparatus. So, if we do this at higher concentration, the 2-liter beaker we have will become so dense that our stir won't turn. Okay. Yeah.
We check up to 80. After 20, it's really saturated.
Okay.
Speaking about
traffic
action.
Mm-hmm.
After 20, it's more or less.
Yeah, we can't see the difference between 10 and 20. We will show the other quantity later. Yeah, but not on this one.
I wanted to ask on that other graph of the data. The different Reynolds numbers, is it a scattering or is it like a 10 ppm? Or is it systematic as a function of Reynolds? I can't tell particularly since your legend is not in color and I cannot identify too well.
Okay, so you see this one is at R lambda 285, and the shape of the symbols means Reynolds number, and whether it's a field or not means it's which component.
Yeah, but do those data at a constant 10 ppm, do they depend systematically on Reynolds number, or is it random scatter?
No, it has a systematic dependence.
Systematic.
Yeah.
And the other question I have is, well, how do you know there's no degradation of the polymer during your experiment?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So the way we check this is just practical. We measure this over time, so we can see how this quantity change over time. So all these data reported here are checked for example, these are collected over like 24 hours. So over 24 hours, we didn't see a systematic change. But for this one, this hydrogen number data, these are only taken over the first 3.5 hours because we see this acceleration goes up to the water value after a short time. That's why we have such a scatter for those high real number data. Okay. By looking at this, we are thinking, well, how could we possibly explain this change of acceleration variance? Well, so we go to this Yekulom Heisenberg scaling. We say, well, so this goes as epsilon 3/2 to nu to the 1/2. And if we say, well, this is given by the energy injection rate, this epsilon here is given by the injection rate, then this we know this this quantity, the fluctuation velocity, doesn't change much. And the integral scale, even though we don't have a measure, but we would think this won't change because that's given by the size of our apparatus. Okay. So which means this epsilon, the energy injection rate stays more or less constant, it changes very little. But you can see the variance change a lot. So the only possibility is the energy dissipation rate will change. Okay, so we'll show later the evidence that this is most likely the case. So the other quantity we measure are this autocorrelation of acceleration. So we have such a horrible expression here. The reason we do that is because of the experiment bias. So you can see this correlation involves acceleration at the time t and acceleration at the time some later time. So if we measure a track is too short, it doesn't last for that long, then our measured correlation at a later time will be biased to this particle tracks which stay in the measurement volume. So that's why we define this in such a way in the hope to take care of this bias error. So that's how we measure this acceleration autocovariance, and this is the correlation coefficient. But if we plot the data, now these are the acceleration covariance. You can see that because of the reduction of acceleration variance, so this correlation, this covariance decreases dramatically at a short time, and then it decays. So, but now if you normalize this and plot this acceleration correlation coefficient, you can see an increase of this correlation over acceleration over time. Okay. So this is the
different colors, different concentration?
Yes. Sorry, I should have said that. This is water, and this is 3.5 ppm, 5 ppm, 10 ppm. So if you increase concentration, the polymer, the acceleration correlation stay longer and longer. Okay, increase also with the polymer concentration. So now, let's say, can we get some quantitative information from this? One usual number people use is this zero crossing time. So that's when this correlation decays to zero. And for purely Newtonian turbulence, that's a quite stable. This time is very stable over a wide range of Reynolds numbers. So far we have observed this is about 2.1, 2.2 tau eta. But for polymer case, you can see this, especially for these guys, when they cross zero, it will be really shallow. The slope will be really shallow. It's very sensitive to measurement error. So what we did is we take this 1 over E, the E 14 time scale. So
is the slope proportional to the time of the polymer or not?
It's hard to tell. It's really hard to measure these quantities over.
The slope, the initial slope there of the exponential.
You mean the initial slope, or which slope you are? I was talking about the slope at zero crossing.
The initial
slope. Well, I would still think it's differentiable. So it means it will be zero.
No, the factor. If you have an exponential slope, you're going to have a p factor, right?
if I have...
It's not exponential, the behavior of the beginning, no.
At the zero, I mean, I would imagine it's a differentiable, that's what I'm saying. So it has to be zero, the slope at origin. I guess that's not what you meant.
Decay time.
Yeah, but that's okay. Okay, so here, so we take this 1 over e decay time. Yeah, yeah. So then what we think is, well, this 1 over e decay time is still a small scale quantity. So it should be determined only by small scale parameters. Okay, so we know acceleration we can write as this. The epsilon, the dissipation rate, and the viscosity, and this 1 over e decay time, it should also scale with this viscosity, with this energy dissipation rate. So now there are two possible scenarios. One is to say, well, if viscosity changes, but epsilon dissipation stays the same, then we would have this relation between the acceleration variance and this 1 over e decay time. But on the other hand, if we know viscosity is not changed, but if nu is the same, but epsilon dissipation changes, then we would have this relation. So we could just plot our data and see which relation is correct. So here we plot this normalized acceleration variance over this normalized 1 over e decay time. And the data is rather scattering, but you can see this is a minus one slope, and this curve is a minus three slope. So I would say the data suggests a support more of about this minus three relation, which means the viscosity is roughly the same, but the energy dissipation rate decays dramatically with when we add polymers. So the polymer effect can be explained by this decrease of
viscosity.
The viscosity could change, but at these concentrations, there are some theories about drag reduction, which tends to explain this by
saying.
Yeah.
They suggest that viscosity change.
Yes, yes, yes. So we just want to check whether we just want to check whether that makes sense for the bulk turbulence. Well, the data says, well, that's not the case.
I think it's important to say again that the fluctuating velocities stay the same, right? The log scale, the fluctuating velocity stays approximately the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So the energy injection stays the same, which means all the processes that our inertia driving really doesn't change.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so for the first part, what we can say is, well, we observe this suppressing of acceleration variance, but not on the shape of the acceleration PDF, and we see there is a decrease of acceleration variance and the increase of this correlation time, and this can be explained by the change of the dissipation rate, and there is a strong polymer concentration dependence, which is somehow we have to consider if we.
Can I ask you something? You didn't check the dependence on bisynthetic matter because you plot everything for different arenas between different bisynthetic.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing next. Not yet. Okay, so. So this is still on acceleration, so the Weissenberg number effects come later, okay? So we also calculate this spatial correlation of acceleration. That is done not with silicon strip detectors, because from that technique, the measurement volume is very small, and also we can't have more than one particles in the measurement volume. So that's done with this 3D, with the cameras. And the measurement volume is bigger, and we can have like a few hundred tracer particles in the measurement volume in the same flow, but just a little bit bigger measurement volume. Okay. And so this is a picture of the equipment. You can see three cameras here, 1, 2, 3, and then laser beam passing through the center of the tank. And okay. So now, just to convince you, we can measure acceleration accurately with the cameras also. So this is a PDF of normalized acceleration. These are three component measured with cameras at around 460. We compare with a reference. This is a measurement with silicon sphere detector. That's a very high resolution because that data was taken over 1 month. So it has a lot of statistics, more than 100 million statistics for this case. So when we compare with that, we can see that our camera measurement is quite accurate, up to 40 RMS. They agree very well. And if we look at the force moment, so these are multiplied by the force, we can see it's converging within the scattering. It's a pretty good agreement. Okay. So we also from this we also saw the collapse of acceleration PDF if we normalize by its own RMS value. For these are at one Reynolds number but at different concentrations. Okay, so the Weissenberg number is the same.
What are the colors?
The colors just for different concentration, polymer concentration.
All of them cannot be seen. So green is,
they're not shown.
Green is one.
Green is one, and what is seven?
Seven is cyan, sorry.
Yeah.
No, cyan. It's
bad.
Yeah, okay. So this is green, cyan, and yellow. That's really bad.
Yeah,
it is there. This is a green, cyan,
and yellow. Which one is green?
Green is 1 ppm.
Which is what downstairs in the curve.
It's hard to see. So there are some green there. You can see here, this is green. And then 5 is blue, and then 7 is cyan, which is here. And then magenta, and then yellow. Sorry for the choice of color. Yeah. Okay, so we measure acceleration correlation, spatial correlation. If we see in RMM volume, we see multiple particles, so we can pick two of them. And then we can define a separation vector, and then we can decompose our acceleration to the longitudinal and the transverse component. Then we can calculate the correlation in the longitudinal and transverse component correlations. So that's how we do it. So first of all, for the Newtonian case, we have done this. This is work together with Nick Dario and Eberhard. So we compare with the prediction by Obkov and Yagnom, and as Rick pointed out to me recently, the assumption made in this theoretical work is not correct. This joint Gaussian assumption for the velocity derivatives is not correct. But it's interesting to note that the normalized correlation coefficient, which means if we take the variance away from that prediction, we see pretty good agreement with our experiment. And similarly in Rex's work, I think you worked out the one without using this point Gaussian assumption, and the shape seems to be okay. So except the magnitude is wrong. Okay, for this prediction. So,
but I would claim that as Reynolds number goes to infinity, the shape will change this
model. It could be, yeah. Just, yeah.
We're at 690, just the infinity is bigger.
Okay. Okay. So then we do this for the polymer solution. We see a very different behavior. For the polymer case, if we increase concentration, we see this correlation, the acceleration are correlated over longer and longer distances for both longitudinal and transverse component. And for the last 20 ppm, we don't know, something happened. At small scales, as you can see, there are quite a lot of scattering. It might be elastic turbulence, so we are not sure. But you can see the data here is not smooth at the origin, so there seems to be a jump if we you extrapolate this to small, to very small separations, which is something mysterious to us. Okay, so.
Why would a jump indicate elastic?
We don't know. It's just some guess. I don't know why.
The scale is much smaller than the size of this polymer.
No. The size of the polymer is less than one. Yeah. So this happened at the sea. Yeah. Yeah. This is still bigger than a single polymer. But okay. So then we see a big effect. One thing we could ask we asked ourselves is if we ignore viscous stress, now we know the acceleration is given by the pressure gradient, and now we have polymers. We have this polymer stress here. And if acceleration is only given by the pressure gradient, we know there is a relation between the transverse the correlation of the transverse component and the correlation of the longitudinal component. They are given by this integral. And well, at least we could check whether this is still the case. So we just plot our data. So this is for water. Well, so now the open symbol are direct measurement of this transverse correlation. Okay, and the field, the solid symbols are the integral of the measured longitudinal correlation. So we integrate over with this by assuming this correlation, this relation is still correct, and then we just compare this with the direct measurement. If the relation is correct, then these two should agree. Yeah. So we see for water, they should. And then for 1 ppm, 5?
That implies localized hydrogen is correct.
That's my question.
And it implies that your acceleration is dominated by not a solid oil, but by what we call curling reserve.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very, very good. I mean, that's one thing I would ask at the end. What does this mean? Yeah. So, thanks for the answer. So then we increase concentration, and then, oh, this is again same. But you can see the open symbols and the field symbols are agree. And this is 10 ppm, and then finally 20 ppm. So there is some scattering, but overall, this relation seems to be quite okay. So that's basically, so this is just the same data but plot on a log scale, on a semi-log scale. So what do we see is, so first of all, it's very, very interesting to see this acceleration correlated over such a long distance because the single polymer, even at the maximum extension, is smaller than eta. But as you can see, these correlations extend over hundreds of eta. Okay. And also, this correlation still satisfies this kind of isotropic relation. So, this is the question: what does this mean to the constitutive equations for this polymer stress tensor? And Ray just answered some. I think this could be something interesting for when people develop this theory on constitutive relations. So now let's look at this velocity struct function. Again, these are measured with cameras. So we increased the measurement volume to 5 centimeters, and that's about on the order of this integral length scale. And we're using the same particles as before. Okay, so just to remind you, okay, so this is how we do the structure function measurement with Lagrangian data, okay. Because these are Eulerian quantities. So here is the data at R lambda 290. What we plot here are compensated longitudinal velocity struct function. So we just divided this by R to the 2/3, so the Kolmogorov scaling. And you can see for the water data, we see a nice plateau for large separation. And for polymer data, we also see a plateau at a large separation, but there is a big difference at small separations.
Where is your box size?
You mean the measurement volume?
Yes.
Yes.
The integral scale.
The integral scale. let me see, this is our lambda 290. The integral scale would be somewhere here. Yeah.
Okay.
Huh? Pardon me?
This is compensated with what? And this is already compensated.
Compensated just by R to the 2/3. Yeah. So to see the plateau. So we didn't make the compensation with the epsilon, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So from this, what we see is, well, if this plateau gives us the energy transfer rate, right, then the polymer seems to still have the same energy transfer rate, but just something happened at small scales. Okay. So, but this scale is not small. It's about 200 times of the maximum extension of these polymers. So even though they are small, but their effect can be seen at large, very large scale.
Do you lambda
value, or did you look this one lambda value? Yeah, we looked at several. I'm going to show later just the one example of this, okay. What is the Weissenberg here? For R lambda 290, this is about 2. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the concentration?
This is, I didn't write down, 5 ppm, sorry. Yeah. Very small, very small. Yeah. Yes?
There were simulations with Kolmogorov flow where they say that polymers change the large scale flow as well. What would you say about these simulations?
What we have observed is for this experiment at 5 ppm, we didn't see a detectable change of RMS velocity. Okay. So that's all I can say.
Well, you can also say that if you go up in concentration.
You can go, if you go up, you can see a slow decay, a small decay of this RMS velocity. But as I will show later, this is not enough to explain everything. So there is a small change of large-scale flow. But at 5 ppm, we're pretty confident this is very, very small, this change.
If can I just comment on this? Not all the simulations show an increase of large-scale fluctuations. Some simulations show that there is not, in agreement with what you show here, there is no change of large-scale flow, but only a small scale.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to see. What if there are simulations which do this and that, what is the status?
Okay, so one thing we could try is, well, could some change of viscosity alone can make up this difference? Well, we just try it, and then, well, sure, if you change this, you can make it, you can, if you change nu, you can make this eta, because eta depends on nu, you can make this collapse, but how much it would change? It would increase by 5 times, which is not possible with this 5 ppm, isn't it? So that doesn't work. There must be something else. So here, that's what Guido asked. This might be a Weissenberg number dependent. We just plot the data for 4 different reload numbers. So at R lambda 200, this is Weissenberg number 1.4. And then it goes all the way to here. This is R lambda 10. Weissenberg number 10. Okay. So to increase. And you can see the effect goes like this. If you increase Weissenberg number, this effect, this goes.
This is compensated with what? Again, maybe R to 2/3?
Okay, so for this, on this plot, these data are compensated by epsilon, by C2 times epsilon R to the 2/3. And epsilon is the epsilon for water case. The reason is, yeah, because from this we know, it's not this one. From this one, we see this epsilon doesn't change. So that's why we choose this epsilon from the water case to normalize the polymer data. As you can see, they're all flat at 1. So that suggests this compensation is fine, yeah?
But then in this one, your epsilon is actually decreasing.
On the large, but that's because of the finite measurement volume effect. This occurs at the boundary. It could be, but we think this is due to the measurement volume size effect, okay, and also because it goes to the integral scale also. But it has to decay in this compensated plot. The curve has to go back to zero at the integral scale, right? So, okay. So now let's try to normalize this. Well, so one thing we thought about is, well, maybe we can define a new length scale which contains viscosity and polymer relaxation time. The reason for this is we know this is small scale effect. This occurs at small scale, so the parameter we can do is viscosity and then the polymer relaxation time. And then we put in this Weissenberg number dependence here with an unknown exponent, and then we just fit our data. So we just take at a different cut of R, and then we see how much the Weissenberg number effect is, and then we fit it, and these are the fit. So this gives us a minus 0.58, or roughly a half fit. And then if we use that to normalize our data, well, the collapse, okay. Yeah. So this seems to be the right one to do, but if you look at a little bit more carefully, then this new length scale times Weissenberg number to minus 0.58 is in fact the eta for water with a very weak dependence on Weissenberg number. And so here this is a plot just to normalize, to plot everything with eta water, okay? So these are the five different cases, five different Reynolds numbers for pure water. And these are the polymer data. Everything is normalized by eta order. They seem to
concentration.
For all of these are at 5 ppm, the same concentration. Okay. So this Weissenberg number dependence is really what we are interested in. And that at the very end, I will show you some recent data with this Weissenberg number dependence. Okay. So now we switch gear to this reload. Before we saw we fixed concentration and we vary reload number. By varying reload number, we vary Weissenberg number. So now we fix the reload number, but vary concentration. And here we show this compensated transverse Eulerian structure function, velocity structure function. And you see for small concentrations, they all go back to the same plateau as the water case, okay? But then when the concentration is higher, then this plateau seems to decrease. Okay. And I forgot to mention, if we now extract what we call this plateau, if we say okay, this plateau gives us an energy transfer rate, and then we can get a set of value for this as a function of polymer concentration. And now we do the same. We look at it in the dissipative scale. Now we compensate it by the R square scaling, which is expected if the flow field is still differentiable. And then we extract the value from this plateau. Then we get another set of value. That should be something, at least it should be something related to the energy dissipation rate. Okay. So now if we plot these two values here, then you see here the blue curve is this energy transfer rate at a different concentration. That's divided by the energy transfer rate for the pure water case. And then the blue curve is this energy dissipation rate divided by the energy dissipation rate for the water case. So
the transfer rate includes the beginning scale, the initial range.
Yeah, that's at the plateau.
They are not completely flat at the end. So
well,
it depends on where you.
It's okay. So that's
okay. It depends where you.
We measure here.
The yellow one.
Right. So probably it will increase a bit more at the at a larger scale if we can measure. Okay.
But do you know that C2 is the same constant for polymers?
That's a very good question. We don't know. Okay. We don't know.
What?
Yeah, we don't know. So we just assume the same C2.
Yeah.
So as Greg said, this might also contain some dependence of C2 on polymer concentration. But then
you see that the large scale doesn't change so much, right? So C2 should be connected to large scale.
I don't know. Yeah. So I mean, for this polymer case, there is no, we don't have like K41, like a four fifth law, like anything, yeah, to guide. Yeah. So all we have done here are practical. So the one question come back to Fuchsang's question is how is there any change in the large scale flow velocity which can change all these? So well, here this is a plot of U prime cube compared with U prime cube at for the water case, and you see for small ones they change very little, and even for larger ones this change is much smaller compared to the change in the well, we think this is a quantity in the inertial range and this is a quantity in the dissipative range. So the change in the large scale is not as dramatic as the change in the smaller scales. And what's interesting is if we look at the energy transfer rate, we seem to see a critical concentration above which then there is a big effect, below which is a kind of like a plateau. But for dissipation range behavior, it's a continuous change. And if you remember the plot which I showed earlier for this acceleration variance, which is also, because acceleration is a smaller scale quantity, the acceleration variance change is also a continuous dependence on polymer concentration. Okay. So, well, we just showed the data we extracted from the transverse or variance structure function. We can do the same for the longitudinal structure functions and the dissipative scale and the inertial scale, and then we put the two data sets together. So there is a clear difference between the inertial range and the dissipative range behavior for this data. Okay. So this is one of Guido's work with the coworkers, and what they did is a linear polymer model. And then what they change is the Weissenberg number. But what I learned is this, for the linear model, there is a kind of an equivalence between concentration and Weissenberg number. So we could qualitatively compare this plot with our previous plot, even though here is a Weissenberg number dependence, and what we have seen is a concentration dependence. Okay. So. So for a linear model, because they can be infinitely stretched. So the more polymer you put in, the less each one will be stretched.
Your polymer is not
linear. No. This what I'm saying is from this linear model, they could, if they want, they could put a concentration here instead of a Weissenberg number. Okay. So.
Can you remind me what the simulation of TD?
Yes.
Yes,
but
it doesn't mean polymer. It means
concentrated
aggression.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. So here, what we see this is we see an effect of varying Weissenberg, but that's what's done by varying Reynolds number. These two parameters are coupled in this study. We see a dependence, but it's probably very weak if depending on how we normalize the data, how we group the parameters together, and we see the effect on both energy transfer rate and energy dissipation rate, and on energy transfer rate there seems to be a critical polymer concentration above which we see below which we don't see much effect. So now let's talk about some very new experiment. And the motivation for doing this new experiment is how can we isolate the Weissenberg number effect by fixing both polymer concentration and the Reynolds number? So we change only one parameter at a time instead of two together. So in our experiment, we know the integral scale is about a constant. Okay. And the Kolmogorov scale is given by this definition, it's a new cube over epsilon. So the Weisenberg number is the ratio between these two time scales. So if we work it out, we see here epsilon appears, and this on these two places, nu appears, the viscosity appears. So now let's imagine what do we mean? Or what do we mean by fixing a Reynolds number? Fixing a Reynolds number means we fix scale separation. So that means that we fix L and eta. If we vary anything else, then if L and eta is fixed, then our lambda is fixed. So we know L is fixed by geometry, and eta we can fix by varying epsilon according to this law. So if we vary viscosity, but we vary epsilon to nu cube, then we could also fix eta. And then if we put that here, this is a nu cube, then we got this Weisenberg number would vary with nu square. So just by changing this solvent viscosity, we could fix Reynolds number, but vary Weisenberg number. So, but what the price we pay is here. You see, so our lambda goes as square root of u to the fourth. This is RMS velocity to nu and epsilon. So if we vary this with nu cube, then we have to vary fluctuation velocity accordingly. Okay, so that means more energy we have to dump into the flow. It means our propeller has to be to spin faster. And if you look at the tau eta, because the tau eta goes as nu over epsilon square root, the tau eta decreases a lot if we do this way. So we have to run our camera much faster in order to measure this if we just increase concentration. So there is always a trade-off. So, but anyway, we did it, and these are some data which here we have three different purely Newtonian cases. We just want to show that in this case we can indeed collapse everything, and this eta is actually a number. We could plot the same plot with R in terms of millimeter. They would still collapse. Okay. So because we change, we keep eta the same by varying viscosity. So these are done with water and glycerol solution, mixture of water and glycerol. And then you see here from this cross is so now this is the only place where we change the polymer. So this is a shorter chain polymer. The molecular weight is 6 million instead of 18 million. So as a result of that, the polymer relaxation time is smaller. So then for that case, even if we put this polymer in the same flow, then this one will have a smaller Weisenberg number compared to the polymer we used to use. Okay, so you can see the three Newtonian case, and then when we put in this short chain polymer, it's almost the same as Newtonian fluid. There is no detectable difference between this measurement.
How much you change?
I think this from here to here is 1.6. So it's only 1.6 times of water viscosity. And this one, I think is 1.8. Yeah, something less than 2. Less than a factor of 2.
Did you check how long time your polymer stay in the water viscosity?
The relaxation time.
No, how long time survive in water glycerol solution? The problem with water glycerol solution that the polymer is destroyed very fast.
Because of?
Because of glycerol.
I see. So some chemical reactions.
It's chemical. Because of stretching, the oxygen faster going.
Okay. Okay, I see. We didn't know that, but when we did this, we still monitor this change with time. So we always do that.
Yeah. You get the same viscosities?
Yeah.
We saw no change, right?
Yeah. So we, for example, we measure this. That's the quantity we always monitor is how this change with time. So we do this with
as a. It's 5 times much, and then polymers stay several minutes.
I see. Okay. Okay, so it could be that the polymer after we add is different than what we thought. But so this number of the Weissenberg number might change a little, but I think relatively they are still the same, right? The trend that we see is still fine. So, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mark it down. It's all at 5 ppm. All at 5 ppm. So, but you see this, so when we increase Weissenberg number, so at 0.3 it's about the same as water, and now this one is at 1.3, this is 3.0, and this is 3.1. So there is a systematic change with Weissenberg number, and there seems to be a critical Weissenberg number, which is on the order 1. So we have to do more experiment between these two ranges to see where is this critical Weissenberg number. So that this is ongoing work. And then we tried this normalization, which we did for the case where we varied both Weissenberg and the Reynolds number. So for that we found this scanning, but now it doesn't work. So that seems to say that one is a special case. That kind of collapse is a special case when we change both Reynolds and Weissenberg, but it's not general enough. Okay. So here, this graph shows how this acceleration variance. This is RMS acceleration and RMS velocity change with the Weissenberg number. In this case, so the solid data are new data done at the same Reynolds number, and the open symbols are the old data which were done with varying both Weissenberg and the Reynolds number. Okay. So we see here on RMS velocity it doesn't change, which is expected because at this 5 ppm concentration, it doesn't affect large scale flow much. And then for acceleration, we see a strong decrease, and then there seems to be a saturation even we increase a Weissenberg number further. And the same we have seen before, but since we changed both Weissenberg and Reynolds, so it's not clear what's going on. So now with this, we know this is this Weissenberg number effect. Okay, so that's all. Thank you.
The first point is not zero, it's not water, it's already polymer. We have a tension.
This one?
Yeah.
No, you mean this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is 0.34, right.
So you have another point at zero.
Well, you one, you mean, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
So
that's right.
Point.
Yeah. There is a point which I just plotted. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question for Guido that is connected to your. Do you see in the simulation also this big increase in the risk of the scale at changing environment?
No,
it
didn't. I think if we can compare anything. We should fix it comparing only to very small concentration, up to 5 ppm.
Why?
Because you see from the phenomenology, we don't see any effect in the inertial range on large scale. We see only at the dissipative scale, which is exactly what it is. But I'll show up to 5 ppm, then there is something.
From our simulations of homogeneous isotropic turbulence, we have seen dissipation reduction exactly as, well, it may not be exactly, but it's very similar to what you have seen as a function of concentration. We have looked at three different concentrations and energy dissipation rate consistently decreases.
So you mean simulation with the FINIP model?
Yes.
Okay.
And both force and decaying, and there's dependence on concentration, Weissenberg number. It's exactly the same. Also, indeed, it's also true that in simulations, if you...
You are going to show this after?
No.
Okay.
I mean, if you push your Reynolds number very large, then as... I mean, you see a small increase in energy at small wave numbers to look at the Fourier spectrum. But if your Reynolds number are not so large, or if your concentration is high, then you don't see any major effect in small case. I mean, this was also seen in some of the papers of Collins, you might know already. Energy spectrum, what happens at large length scales, right? Whether there is an increase in energy at large length scales or not, when you look in Fourier spectrum. So what we found was that if your concentration is large or Reynolds number are not too large, then there is a negligible effect. But if you increase your Reynolds number, keeping the concentration same, then you indeed see that at large length scales or small k, there is an increase in energy.
You see an increase at a small wave number.
Yes, which is also seen by Collins and others. I mean, it depends on how much you are pushing the Reynolds number. If you push Reynolds number, keep concentration small, you can see that.
So how does that compare with experiments?
Yeah.
I mean, this is published, right? You can do simulations and see things, and the question is, how is it?
Yeah, changed? So I don't know. I mean, if I put error bars, then okay, as I'm saying, it's not very dramatic. But I don't know how much you saw an increase.
Well, we didn't see any increase in large scales, right?
No, in energy spectrum. Okay. Because when you do structure functions, things mix up. So I would like to see in the Fourier spectrum
Compare the structure functions. To whatever you like, which we cannot do experimentally. There's limitations to the experiment.
So
it's kind of to show us where we have problems.
Yeah, but structure functions are similar, as I'm saying.
As far as dissipation rate is concerned, when we calculate the structure function and normalize it by the sometimes once by R square and once by R 2/3, we get exactly what we have got. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we should compare something
else. I mean, I don't know how much quantitatively because I haven't checked that. But with concentration, it decreases clearly.
Mm-hmm.
That is one. The other
Do you see a threshold?
No, because we never go to that concentration. So we haven't seen it saturating.
Well, you should do it.
That should be done,
it's out there. Yes.
Molecules radiate. So do you know how much of the energy is dissipated in the radiation? Molecules radiate. If you take a molecule and you twist it and you let it spring back,
What do you mean, photons?
Electrons. Yeah.
Radiate? I mean,
I don't know. I really don't know.
Electric glow? That's what you're saying?
Expect some
electromagnetic radiation coming up? I mean, you have this plot where you see the dissipation. I mean, there is this epsilon, the dissipation goes way down, right? And I mean, you know, it's changing. Dissipation is changing a lot. And actually, where does the energy go in the simulations? Where does it go?
Well, he said it goes to large scales.
It comes back to the polymers. I mean,
and where does it go? I mean, this is actually my question. So you pump energy into these elastic degrees, where does it go?
If you now take the energy spectrum for the one with the polymer, and now want to say, okay, I want to map this energy spectrum on the fluid energy spectrum, just changing the viscosity. So I put a scale-dependent viscosity. I don't care about its sign. And then I can put it back where it was. And then there is a viscosity which becomes negative. So those are the length scale where energy from the polymer comes back into the fluid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But dissipation, do I have to mention that I have these polymers and they are relaxing back and that's viscously damped? And that the energy actually is just jumping the cascade and it goes into viscous. There's no phonons. I mean, there could be waves, Kelvin waves, but there could be waves in the system.
One of the possibilities, that's what Lebedev and Bakowski and Dashapoksong suggested. It's elastic waves.
Yep.
It's elastic waves. That's exactly what I wanted to say, is that these fluctuations, if you observe at very small scale, possible that it's signature
elastic waves
which are random.
Yeah.
If you look on power spectra and time domain, and frequency domain and k domain, maybe you can extract some.
We did see a fluctuation in the acceleration.
One thing that's always a caveat for these experiments, of course, is we have quite some large particles in there. And they're interacting with those polymers also, right? The question is how much are these still tracers? I don't know. know these are quite large particles compared to the polymers. They're of course averaging and they're sitting and they're viscously coupled to the liquid.
Less than the number of polymers we put in, less than the by weight.
By weight, the number of polymers.
It's less. It's less. Much less. Yeah. I don't think it will affect the flow, but whether these particles are still good tracers for this kind of flow.
For these very small fluctuations, probably they are. Okay, we should take a break here for 5 minutes, and then I think we can leave 5 minutes. Okay, thank you.